Good evening, everyone. Here we are, Hoax Busters Live, Saturday night. And we hope that you can join us. We hope you have joined us. And we have a lot of things to talk about tonight. Hopefully, we'll have some guests on. I did invite Ryan Masano on around 8:30-ish. I'd like to catch up with him because he's been putting some really good videos up, going to these city and, you know, city council meetings and them throwing him out of the meetings and stuff like that.
Scaring him out of the meetings.
Yeah. So we definitely, I hope we can get him on. And again, if other people are here, we can get them on too. So we are on, you know, Free Speak Radio. And
Speak Free Radio.
What's that?
Speak Free Radio.
Oh, did I say
Free? I know. It's okay. I mean, my gosh.
Speak Free Radio.
You said it perfectly today in the walk and talk.
There's just so many things to remember.
Have that thing here. Can you delete that out of there?
What are you talking about?
The SFR studio. Can you delete that out?
Oh, why is that even in there? Hold on.
Yeah, because we have that in. We can't have people in.
Oh, okay. See, I don't usually do this, and I don't know. Hold on. Let me see what I can do here, Miss Diane.
Okay.
Okay, Rebo. There you go.
Boom. As Blurry Uncle Murray says, boom.
Okay, there you go.
All right.
So we're ready to go. What we usually start off my Hoax Busters show because we were reviewing the book. Miss Diane got the book there, and she can show it to us. It's the 6 Million Fact of Fiction. And she's going to, you know, cover maybe 10 minutes maybe at the book.
10 to 15. We'll see.
Okay. Well, that's fine. So if you can start off with that and we'll go from there. So how's that?
That's fine. It's Jim Rizzoli and Diane King tonight. We're doing a duo, the dynamic duo, because our other associates are otherwise engaged, you might say, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Chapter 6. We did 5 last week, which dealt with the Einsatzgruppen. And that's always a lot of questions and accusations because the Jews like to focus on what they can't prove and what's been disproven. Chapter 6 is on confessions. In this section, there are 3 phases of concentration camp trials. Have to set the groundwork, have to set the stage. The first phase was the years immediately following the end of the war, or in the Soviet Union's case, even before the official end of the war of the conflict. These trials were often held near where the camps were located and overseen by military courts from the Allied nations. The first of these trials took place, as recounted earlier, at the end of 1944 in the Soviet-occupied territories, where personnel from the Majdanek camp were prosecuted and executed for gas chambers and other alleged atrocities at the camp. Sounds like we need a do-over. How would that work? Similar local trials then took place as the Soviets advanced west, and this process was duplicated by the Allies. As they advanced east in this way, for example, the British military put the camp personnel in Bergen-Belsen on trial and executed them. This was then followed up with the greatest legal perversion of all, known as the Nuremberg military tribunals, where every established legal norm was subverted and rejected, also as mentioned earlier. The next phase of concentration camp trials started in the late 50s. You thought it was done in the 40s. You thought it was done after World War II. This was carried on until the 1970s. These trials only started once the Holocaust storytellers had started to properly assemble their entire hoax narrative. Thus, guards or other personnel from any camps were tracked down and put on trial. A very large number of these trials failed in their efforts of prosecution for lack of evidence, but many others sent the accused to prison. The third, and apparently the final phase of concentration camp trials, started with the John Demjanjuk prosecution, which heralded in a new legal principle that just allegedly being at a camp was enough to be implicated in whatever crimes had already occurred there or had been declared occurred there. The last of these trials were held as late as 2023, and the Demjanjuk prosecution, James Traficant, Congressman James Traficant, got involved. The first wave of confessions extracted under torture, as dramatically we talked about last time about the Katyn massacre case outlined in an earlier chapter, where Germans were forced to confess to the mass shootings of Polish soldiers, even though the Soviets had carried out the executions, which was later discovered, but not declared quite so vehemently as they were when they were supposedly to have happened in the first place. The first wave of confessions was clearly extracted by force from the accused. The second wave of confessions became a legal defense device, starting as they did with the already established facts as laid out by the Nuremberg Tribunal, saw the accused adopt a different tactic, that of not trying to deny that the alleged atrocities or gassings had occurred, but just to deny personal involvement in them, such as, I didn't know anything about it. So rather than denying the whole thing, although Goering did deny the whole thing, he rejected every single testimony that brought the Third Reich in disrepute. Some would say, there might have been those things going on, but I wasn't involved. As there's this one individual, Paul Grubach, dealing with the Demoniac case. It must be understood that even before it became illegal to question the Holocaust storyteller narrative in Germany, there were all manner of social and political pressures that came to bear that would induce the German officials on trial for alleged war crimes to confess to the truth of the extermination of the Jews. And as Grubach explained further, the Nazi extermination camp mythology was declared historical truth. What was the, judicial notice. You couldn't argue with it. That's what it became. That's what it was translated into at the Nuremberg trials. And it was then used as an ideological cornerstone for the Allied installed governments in post-war Germany. From the outset, the defendants in the Nazi crimes of violence trials knew that it was utterly pointless to dispute all or part of the picture of the mass murder of the Jews in which they were accused of having taken part, since that picture had been inculcated into the public mind long before the trials began. So the public had already been indoctrinated about this, about the results of the trial. To the defendants, it must have seemed the most expedient course not to dispute that the alleged murders occurred, only that they weren't involved in them. They could extricate themselves from the crime, basically. Specifically, Christopher Browning, one of his key pieces of evidence for alleged mass extermination at Belzec, is a post-war testimony of SS Sergeant Joseph Oberhauser. Okay. Specifically, he writes that Oberhauser is guilty of clearly falsifying chronology. Doing so gives the impression that until August 42, for the period for which he was on trial, only a small number of test gassings were being carried out in a single gas chamber capable of holding 100 people. Why didn't Oberhauser claim that until August 42, the period for which he was on trial, he never witnessed or operated any homicidal gas chambers? This would have been the best defense, would it not? If he were to deny that the actual existence of it. No, because of the nature of the German legal system that he was entrapped in, it would have been hopeless to attempt to repudiate the Belzec gas chamber story. So it was simply in Oberhauser's best legal interest to confess to the existence of gas chambers and then claim that there were only a small number of gassings while he was in the camp, which if you reduce the numbers, you reduce your culpability and guilt. So the legal situation in Germany where the trials took place was that a logical defense was unavailable to the accused. We talked about this before in various tactics of the various trials. The basic legal principles is as follows. When charged with a serious crime such as murder, under a normal legal system, and Jim likes to bring these up, what is the jurisprudence and the protocol for dealing with, let's say, a federal crime? The prosecution must rely on bringing physical evidence to court. The accused must rely in turn on showing that the prosecution's evidence is either false or mistaken. If the accused can prove that the prosecution's version of events is incorrect, then the case is thrown out of courts for lack of evidence. This is the logical, legal, and correct way of conducting court cases. And you knew this was coming. However, in Germany and many other countries, this line of defense is unavailable to the accused. Merely questioning, or even worse, disproving The prosecution's allegations that there were atrocities is itself a crime and will land the entire defense team, lawyers included, in jail. Case in point. This was, in fact, what exactly happened to Sylvia Stoltz, a lawyer who defended well-known Holocaust revisionist Ernst Zundel in a German court in 2008. Stoltz was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison and banned from practicing law for five years after declaring in court during the Zundel trial that the Holocaust story was untrue. And again, there's a book, obviously, about that. In fact, she left the courtroom being carried out saying Sieg Heil. So she was definitely unrepentant. The third wave of trials adapt legal liability to avoid defense tactics. It was in response to this second wave defense tactic that the Holocaust storytellers developed a new legal principle of general responsibility. Rather than seeing those accused being acquitted, because no evidence could be brought before the court showing that they had actually committed any murders or gassings personally, the law was adapted to prove guilt just by having been at a camp. They would be guilty by association, something they are attempting to do in every country, including the U.S. This has led to, for example, the prosecution and conviction of, in 2022, of a 97-year-old woman, Irmgard Fürschner, because she had worked as a typist at the Stutthof concentration camp. The charge against Fürschner was that she had aided and abetted those in charge of the camp and the systematic killing of those imprisoned there between June 1943 and April 45. In her function as a stenographer and typist in the camp commandant's office, I've always said the typewriter is mightier than the gun. I live by that. I type, therefore I am. She did too, but she was prosecuted for it because she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, Jim has talked about this also, the principle of corpus delicti. Confessions and allegations must be supported by physical evidence. When all confessions and eyewitness statements are considered as evidence, they must be tested for their truthfulness. In all legitimate legal systems, this is known as the principle of corpus delicti. This phrase, borrowed from Latin, literally means body of the crime, and is the legal principle that a confession or statement by itself is not enough for a conviction. The allegation must also be backed up by some sort of physical evidence, tested proof. For example, just because someone has made a statement saying that they witnessed a mass execution does not mean this allegation is true. Statements making such allegations cannot be accepted as accurate without supporting physical evidence. This principle has largely been ignored when it comes to Holocaust confessions and especially eyewitness statements. Time and time again, any statement has been taken to be completely true and accurate, no matter how far-fetched or absurd it might, even to the extent that the math doesn't add up, the physics doesn't add up. Some examples of such patently absurd claims are given later in this book. It's an extremely important principle to remember. When all confessions and eyewitness statements are read, anybody can claim anything, but before they are believed, their claims must be shown to be in accord with the facts and physical evidence. They've got to add up. However, when it comes to confessions and eyewitness statements about the Holocaust, the principle of corpus delicti is instantly thrown out the window, and any claim may be made by anybody is immediately accepted as true, except the accused. Ta-da! Boom! As Uncle Murray says.
Are you done?
I am done.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the whole Nuremberg trials, which again, they were originally the international military trials, and then they were called other trials too. All depends where they were put, yep, done. I mean, but it went on for a long time. People, you know, they think this is just a couple of years. No, this went into the 70s.
And even today, as it turns out, according to a number of people being tried and hunted down and tried.
Yeah. So it was bad. I mean, these people, the Germans couldn't even defend themselves. And that's why they you know, a lot of people will say, well, they admitted. They admitted that this happened. And now, remember, like Diane said, they wouldn't admit that they did it, but they admitted that it happened because they probably said to them, if you don't admit it happened, then you're going to get a life sentence or we're going to hang you.
That's there has to be some implication of guilt. And so they said, well, it probably was happening, but I wasn't there, or yeah, I wasn't there long enough. Yeah.
Right. So that's why, you know, people say, oh, the Germans even admitted it to themselves. No, they were tortured. Okay. They were tortured, threatened, that, you know, all these things were said to them. If they didn't say everything according to what they wanted them to say, then, you know, they're going to be in big trouble. They threatened them, you know, they threatened them. And a lot of them caved in, you know, because they felt that they were going to get a big sentence or maybe even death. I don't know. Maybe.
Their families would be affected, turn them over to the Soviets.
Yeah, so it was pretty bad, you know, it was pretty bad. Okay, let's see. I know we got
Uncle Murray.
Uncle Murray over here. Let me just see about getting him in here at the stage if he wants to come in. He's welcome to talk to Uncle Murray. You there?
Oi to the bay. How are you doing there, guys?
How you doing?
What's
I'm doing all right.
That's Michael Jackson in a uniform. I think it's Wehrmacht. It's not SS.
No, it's just a bunch of wackiness as always. Just having fun this weekend. Went on a couple shows. Glad to be here as always. I guess we're having fun, right? You know what it is? It's wonderful what it's come down to. It's come down to free will, consent, and contracts, right? Because they're trying to get us to consent to all this stupidity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree, right. Comply, right. Yeah.
And we just say no, right?
Right, right, exactly. And you're enjoying it. See, a lot of people will compromise. They're talking about everything but what they need to talk about because they're afraid to talk about the things we talk about. And the first thing you put up there is a Michael Jackson meme of the Third Reich. You know, they know how to hire the right people. Just saying.
I tell you.
Is that Anne Frank in the back?
How'd you guess, Jim?
Looks like
I can only see half her face.
Part of her face. Does look like Anne Frank, don't it?
Yeah.
I just figured it was.
Yeah, of course, you have to crop the images sometimes for these things. I didn't plan on this. I'm just gonna hang out for the rest of the show. Thanks, guys. I love you guys. Rock on.
Appreciate you, Uncle Murray.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Because I got to get used to doing this.
And also we have done a number of our discussions on the walk-in talks, and then so we try to bring the current information from the walk-in talks to Hoaxbusters. Because we might have a different audience as well. We're very, I noticed one thing about things that you have mentioned. We're very annoyed at the very best and outraged at the worst that of the number of the people who should be talking about the truthers, who should be talking about the Jews and the Holocaust. And it's how it's permeated every aspect of our society. Uncle Murray has no problem talking about that. CB doesn't. And it's just like you're listening to them. You're saying, when are you going to get to the point? You know who's behind this and how they're doing it. Get to the point. But they're not. And then Mark Weber had his thing this week. Or Henry Herskovitz isn't going to be here tonight because he's attending this IHR conference, to which we're hoping he asked, why won't you have Jim Rizzoli on? Mark won't answer that. He'll just go him and ha and smile and, you know, be all pleasant and just dodge the question. And it would be interesting if Henry said, no, really, why won't you have him on? And why did you bail on the Holocaust issue when you know it's a central point? I could see Henry maybe saying that. He's going to try to be nice as a guest there. But I could see him saying that.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to see what he says when he gets back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because what's really disturbing about it, they're not recording the meeting.
Don't want to be caught in what they're saying, I guess.
Well, no, I mean, what are you ashamed of? Why are you ashamed?
See, why don't you get the word out about what you're doing or not doing?
Well, they don't. Well, look, I can understand not advertising this all over the world.
Lee,
if they know where it is, then people are going to try to break up the meeting. But what the hell's the meeting to break up? They're not doing anything.
Yeah, I mean, they're no danger. They're complying with the Jews' agenda. I mean, this is the way it used to be when they actually were doing something. Truly, they could be threatened and infiltrated and invaded. So yes, they might not have, but the recording is after the fact. They're already, they record it and can release it after they're done.
Yeah, I don't understand. It's just not right how they're reacting. But again, I look at the IHR as, I hate to use the term elite, but they're the elite,
exclusive
revisionists that are in a corner all by themselves doing their thing, not touching the Holocaust topic. It's not an issue with them. And, I really wonder how many Jews are involved with them, because for Mark Weber to bail and just not even want to deal with the Holocaust
after Irving had his trouble with Lipschitz, it's almost like they formed this, their own little Three Stooges cabal. And now they're backpedaling and trying to ingratiate themselves with the Jews. So at the time, Irving could sell his books again because he wasn't able to. Mark doesn't seem to care about the books he's selling, but he's complying with the partial gassings issue that definitely I think sunk Irving, completely buried him.
Right. Well, Mark Weber has I don't know about now, but he had a lot of books at the IHR that he could have got out there and sold or whatever.
They are reprinting his, I think, Hitler's War. And I've read through that. I said, don't bother.
Yeah.
We were taking on some topics at some point. We were going to address that in regard to his believing that there were some gassings.
He said that in that book?
Yes. But also primarily there were Jews coming in from Berlin that were shot immediately. 35,000. Bam. Immediately. And that was in the Soviet zone, if Soviet area. And so that it just, this was stuff that he had written, either, I think this is the 2001. This was after the Lipstadt trial. And what happened before, I don't know, because I don't have that edition. And so now, was he trying to curry favor? You know, the Jews don't forget. Don't sell your soul for the, well, he did. And I don't think anything came of it except losing a huge following of people.
I think what happened with Irving, he thought that he was going to really do well with this. And he was going to be able to run with it. You know, because, when he went to the Zundel trial, he got invited up there. Zundel brought him up from, he was in down Florida there. So anyway, he comes up thinking that this is going to be a big thing for him. And it wasn't. Okay. It actually sunk him. So he ends up testifying at the Zundel trial.
Yeah.
And it worked.
He was supposed to be some glorious historian that they brought in. He probably had something to say about that. Maybe so. But the problem is, and again, you have stated this in regard to the Lipstadt trial, he got so full of himself, he got out of his depth, got away from the defamation issue, and allowed them to bring in the Holocaust, which he was not well versed in.
Okay. So I think the same thing happened with Fred Lucha too. I think he thought this was going to be a big thing for him.
Yeah, I agree.
He was going to go places with this. It did just the opposite with Fred.
They underestimated the Jews. They really did.
He lost his job. He ended up going to California and doing stuff up there. He has quite a story if you ever want to talk to Fred. I don't know what Fred's up to now, but he does have quite a story. And then he ends up working at
Home Depot, I think.
Home Depot.
That's where they found out about him, and he got fired from that.
Yeah. I mean, this is incredible. The guy's what, 75?
He's 80. He's over 80
now. But I'm just saying, when he was working, he was probably 75.
Right.
And someone didn't like him or something. They knew who he was, and he ends up getting fired there. So yeah. Fred's been through a lot because of this. There's no doubt about
it. That's true. But it wasn't what he expected. I agree. I think he thought he had his heyday when he came back with the information that would, and it did, basically generated a whole new shining light in the Zundel trial. The problem is the Jews now know who you are.
Well, even Zundel, he made a statement back in, I don't know, it was 89. 80s. Okay, he said, in 30 more years, this Holocaust topic is going to be exposed, and people are going to know exactly what's going on, and the world's going to know. And it's like, no. It's never going to be exposed. I mean, some people today, they really think that we are going to make headway in a lot of things. They thought they were going to make headway with the Holocaust trial. Okay, it didn't happen. They think they're going to make headway with the politics of what's going on now that, you know, MAGA, Make America Great Again, we're going to be able
the
to get
election this
that.
Year.
Yeah, they think that we're going to be able to do something there. And especially dealing with the immigration problem, saying, look, we already lost the immigration situation. The government has given the immigrants an open pass, open door.
They have.
They can just come in, nilly willy. No one's going to stop them. And it's horrible. It's going to get worse.
Even in Texas, where Abbott, or the governor, has declared, both control of borders. And you have brought this up in an article. They pile these people that come across the border into buses and take them to Chicago or New York. Well, they get them out of Texas. Well, that's not it. The problem is they don't get them all out of Texas. There are communities that are being formed, ghettos that are being formed of illegals down in Cleveland, as I understand it, Ohio. Cleveland, yeah. Texas, on the way to Houston.
Yeah. There's a big, I don't know how many people there.
It's a
thousands.
Community. It's a
thousands. They
shanty town type of thing.
Yeah. They took over like this whole area out there.
And like 50,000 people.
Yeah. Mobile homes.
Yeah.
And everybody's illegal. There's nothing legal down there, So that's a problem. But it's pretty far away from us. We don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. But the point is that even here in this state, with the alleged profusion of politicians saying we'll protect our borders is the most important thing. Yeah, well, right. Like, we're going to believe that. And so then they send them to other states. That is kind of clever, though. What difference would it make in Chicago to have more illegals there? I mean, the place is out of control. New York City is the same way, out of control. Boston? Yeah.
See, the problem that's happening as they bring them in, there's no place to put them.
That's right.
They don't have housing for the illegals. And they are doing whatever they can to find whatever housing they can find for them.
Whatever building, right? You were talking about that.
Well, there's a lot of empty buildings everywhere that people can be housed. But again, they got to be up to code and they got to be able to accommodate the people if you put them in these buildings. And a lot of them aren't. And you'd have to spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to fix these buildings up to do that. And, that's the problem, getting the money to do that.
And apparently the Fed isn't willing, according to with your governor, Governor Healey in Massachusetts is begging and sobbing because she wanted to have all these illegals come in. Now she doesn't have any place to put them. And the Fed doesn't seem to be coughing up the bucks to support that.
Yeah, it's a big problem. If you bring them in, you got to put them somewhere. And then what are you going to do? Let them hang around? They got to work. So now you're going to bring them into the working field. Now you're going to have a problem because they're going to take away the jobs away from the other illegal immigrants that have been here 20 years.
But you're probably in some capacity legal. In some capacity.
Well, no, they're probably still not legal.
They're still illegal. Yeah.
Well, whatever. But the point is,
their kids are legal.
The kids are born here. Whatever. Yeah. But it's just a funny situation because now they're complaining. They're losing the jobs.
Yep. Why aren't you controlling illegal immigration influx?
Right. Yeah, so now they're getting the taste of it. Okay. Yeah. They're getting the taste of it. And it's only going to get worse. I mean,
of course it is.
So what are you going to do? I mean, it's going to be a big problem. Okay. We hope to have Ryan Massano, if he comes in at 8:30. That's the game plan anyway. But I don't see him right now. So, we gotta move on. Anything you want to talk about? First of all, anybody in the chat? I don't see anybody anywhere here. So I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Then let's go to your videos. We don't get a whole, we haven't had a whole lot of opportunity to do these videos.
Okay. But I didn't want to go there until we,
if somebody comes in after the first video, I guess you could just let them in, I suppose.
Okay. Well, all right. For me to go to the videos, this is going to be a fun because
I know the share screen is a bit odd. That's true. Yeah. I don't mind talking about, I'm trying to think if, I know I've got, I suppose I could mention about the individual that we're writing to.
Well, if you want to talk about that, I'm trying to figure this out. So if you want to talk
No problem. Okay. No problem. Just keep going because you're going to keep the audio going. Philip Hassler was a young man who had composed and produced a song that was politically incorrect in Austria. He was arrested, and I believe his brother was too. And he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Austria has been highly strident about their political correctness. Now, I have been writing to Phil. I sent a Christmas letter to him, and it's very politically incorrect. And it also has, Christmas stuff in it as well. And he wrote back a half a page letter, just a half a page, explaining that. Are you doing it? Oh, now you're out. Okay, I'll go ahead and continue. Hello, Diane, Phil says. Unfortunately, I only received a copy of the envelope with your address. Your actual letter has been withheld by the Stasi. Stasi were the communist secret police in East Germany. And that would also qualify in Austria. They have ramped up the censorship way beyond illegal speech now and are arbitrarily pulling out letters that contain whatever they personally deem problematic or distasteful. Could be any statement or opinion or just a word, really. So I couldn't even give a clear guideline on how I'm actually supposed to write to him. Anyway, I'm going to assume it. They Christmas greetings. So I'd like to say thank you. Regardless, I regret. Didn't work, huh? You'll get it. You've done it before.
That's what you think.
Oh, okay. I regret your effort was in vain, but I appreciate that you took the time to write again. I hope you've had a few beautiful Christmas days, and I wish you a successful, healthy, and happy New Year, despite these insane times. Over here, I'm doing as fine as one can do in my situation, definitely staying positive. He sounds like Alfred in that respect. And of course, Alfred's out of prison now. And he's been on a number of people's interview shows and such. And so, but I attempt to write to these people, mostly gentlemen who have been targeted by their countries, respective countries. And now there are about three in Canada, which trumps the European countries. But I will just go ahead and write to him. And so I said, okay, Phil, let me try a different approach here. I'm going to send you all scripture. Let's see how that works out. I don't think they mind as long as they get something. I'm not giving him any updates, any political editorial, just scripture. I had been starting to send them the John study. So this is John 5. And I did add one small little thing was Jesus's confrontation with his enemies. And they were the Pharisees. Now, I don't know if the politicos in Austria know that the Pharisees were the Jewish leadership and what Jesus said about them. And they weren't very kind, soft. He didn't speak softly to them. And he really wanted them to understand who he was and what he was doing. And so he hit him between the eyes with it. So I'm sending that to Phil as well. I won't have to send yet. I got a letter from Leslie Borey, who is a politician in Canada. His next court date is in January of next year. He's supposed to have a bail hearing. He takes the approach of what he would do if he were the prime minister in Canada. And he has a lot of idealistic things, which are fine. And I said, well, you're dreaming, but I think it's a good idea. There's this one series on Facebook called How to Survive, and they fill in certain things. One is prison. And one of the things they say is to have an active, creative mental life. And Leslie does have that when he's imagining himself being prime minister. None of the things that he mentions will work because he's in Canada, and Canada is run by the Jews, almost even worse than in Europe. They don't have a Bill of Rights. They've got a kind of a document that declares the government decides if you deserve rights. And they get to, you know, what the government gives, the government takes away. And they also now have an anti-Semitic law. They haven't really done anything with it, but it's there. Kind of like what we have in various states here. Kristi Noem in South Dakota and DeSantis in Florida. They have anti-Semitic laws. Total violation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the freedom of speech, expression, but they put it there, I think, in the same vein that President Trump, prior President Trump says, just take the guns away and deal with it in court. I think that's how they look at all of our rights.
All right. How's it going there, dear? Well, Ryan Massano just emailed me. He said that I don't know where he is. So I don't know where he comes in, how he does this. So
okay.
I don't know how it works.
You don't know where he is now? He's in Sydney and Sacramento?
Well, no, he said he's logged on. I just don't know.
Oh.
I don't know where he is. No.
I should attempt to send him the link that I send out.
I'm trying to think if you send him the StreamYard link.
That's what I sent to everybody when I sent it. Yeah.
Oh, but okay.
But I have to get his exact email. If I don't know if you have that in mind.
It's just put James in and it'll come up.
Oh, not on mine because I've never sent him anything before.
Okay,
I'd have to find it in yours.
Alrighty. I don't know why if I send him the link to the what's the link that I'm sending him?
The StreamYard. It'll be the StreamYard.
Oh, no. But isn't it there was two links. There was one was a free speak free radio.
Speak free radio. Now,
Wouldn't that get them in too?
Should if I send, but I could send them both the same.
Hmm.
What I'll do is I'll put it on your email and see if I can pull up. I know what is his email.
Oh, are you in my email?
I am.
To use my email and just it starts with.
It's James. I got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, don't text. Say what it is. Just
I understand. I understand.
And just send them that link because I have to get. I can't. I don't know how to do a share screen on this. I'm getting kicked out every time I do it.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, that's what happens. I don't know. You know how to do this. Diana knows how to run this. I don't really.
I know.
And every time I do it, whatever I choose, it kicks me out. So
okay, I'm sending it now. Okay, good. I'm glad he's here. At least he's here on time.
Yeah. So anyway, let's see if we get him in. If anybody else wants to, once he comes in, we'll talk with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, definitely. He's going to have the floor.
Then we'll go from there.
I just sent it to him.
Okay.
He can pick either one. I would pick the StreamYard one.
Right. I don't know why the other one, he can't get in with the other one. I don't understand that, but I don't know. Because that's what the other people use when they come in, right?
I guess. It's pretty vague, though. I wouldn't be able to tell someone, Diana could, but I wouldn't be able to tell someone how to get into the Speak Free Radio, into our discussion. I wouldn't know what to say. So
yeah.
Anyway, but I went ahead and discussed a couple things from the letters of the people to the people we write to.
Okay. Has he written back, replied back?
No, I'm hoping he's looking for it.
Okay. All right, so let's move on. I think it's a slow night tonight. Not many people, I guess, out there doing anything. And if I can't, Diane, if I can't get into my, if I can't get the share screen.
Oh, well, we can't get the videos going.
Right. So, I mean, we're going to have a problem here, but it is what it is. I could try again, but if I get kicked out, you're just going to have to keep talking.
I will.
All right, just let me.
I could actually discuss the videos.
Well, hold on. It says I'm supposed, for this to be best, you're supposed to have two monitors. I don't have two monitors.
Oh, that's right. Diana always has two monitors.
Yeah. So that's maybe my problem.
Yeah.
Select window or screen. Anyway, I have no clue what to do. I get no clue what to do here. All right. Let me,
he doesn't. Again, I sent it twice. I sent it twice, so I don't know what he's doing. Okay. But
all righty, let me. I there's all these things I can pick, and every time I pick something, it kicks me out. So I don't know. Let me try this. Okay, that's good. Allow. Let me try this. Can you see that?
I can. Okay.
I don't know what to do. If I hit my
BitChute
channel, it's going to ask me to go to that page, and then it's going to kick me out.
Well, don't.
Oh,
do
wait,
that
I got. I think I got him here now. Oh no, that's you. Oh no. This is bad. Okay, it is what it is. You know, when things fail, they fail. Nothing I can do about it. All right, let me see. Let me see what I can do. I don't want to leave. I just want to get into my BitChute channel. That's all.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
That's why I guess you need another.
I don't know. I'm not used to running this, folks. So
right.
Okay, has he got back to you? Can you kind of get on that so I can see what's going on? Because I can't move here, Diane. I might get kicked out.
I understand. Okay? No, I can. Let me go ahead and check.
If I check my email, it might say I'm wanting to leave the page. If I leave the page, I'll get
I don't see anything. I'm going to send another.
I don't know how he did it last time. I really don't know. You know, I really don't know how I did it, you know.
Okay, this is the third email I've sent to him from you.
Okay.
Now what we can do.
Well, Diane, here's the only thing we can do. You got to bring up the page yourself, maybe. Can you do that?
I don't know.
Hold on for a minute. Select window instead.
Let's see what happens here. Well, I don't have share screen as an option.
Yeah, okay. Alrighty. I don't know what to do.
Then I suggest we talk about the videos that you have up there.
Okay. Let me try something here.
Oh, Uncle Murray is saying select window instead. Does that make any sense to you?
Stay up here. Yeah, see, if I click on the BitChute channel up top and the URL up top, it's going to take me out.
Well, he says select window instead, but I don't know what window he's talking about.
That's what I'm doing. Okay, that's what I'm doing. So it's not allowing me to do it. I don't know what any of this stuff means.
I know. Boy,
I don't know any.
I don't even see it. I don't have access to it.
Okay, I don't know. All right. So the only thing I can say is you have to get into the BitChute channel, and we can just bring them up. And you just tell me what the video is. And
yeah, I can do that. Definitely,
we can do that. I mean, that will work out just fine. We'll make it work.
Another possibility, and now I didn't watch the tiny dots, so I have no idea what that's about. The tiny dots, only 6 minutes.
Oh, don't worry about that one. We don't have to deal with that one. Okay.
I'm not particularly interested in talking about your and Phil's discussion about Gaza, but you might want to. Oh, okay. Somebody's there.
All right, let me take a look. I'll see what's going on. Okay, there it is right here. Add to stage. There he is.
It's Ryan. Ryan's rocking and rolling with Ryan. All right.
Good, Ryan. Good you come. We're having just some technical problems getting things done here.
Like figuring out how to make it work.
But that's good. You came in and we could talk to you now. So
fine. Yeah, that's good.
So let me introduce you, Ryan. A lot of people might not know you. I mean, the people on my BitChu channel will. But friends, this is Ryan Masano. Now, Ryan is making a name for himself. He's doing a good job, I tell you right now. I've been putting your videos up on my BitChu channel.
Every time we get them, yeah.
Every time I get them, I put them up. But Ryan, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? You know, go on and, you know, we got plenty of time to talk with you. So go ahead.
Sure. So I'm probably the most remarkable thing about me is I'm the oldest of 18 children.
Whoa, man.
Same mom and dad, Italian. And grew up in a diverse city in America, too, by the way, Vallejo. Wow. So being raised like that was quite an adventure. I'm actually writing a book about it now. And it was only until I owned an insurance company, I started to figure out something is wrong with the money in politics. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I was like, something is wrong. And there's going to be terrible things happening in the near future if something isn't done about this. Mm-hmm. So started speaking in city councils about 12 years ago. And it's only now that 12 years of basically doing it alone with no real attention. Mm-hmm. Now it's actually, you know, people like you and others are really helping to publicize and bring attention to the people who've been running our country since at least 1913. And it's just outrageous mm-hmm. what these liars are able to get away with and just how they're able to affect the lives of every single citizen in America and virtually every person worldwide. So I think a lot of our efforts to end this control of money is instrumental for all 8 billion humans on earth. The people in China, Russia, Hungary, Poland, everywhere, Africa, they're all affected by this. So I think what we're doing is we're one of the least racist people around because we care about everybody who's mm-hmm. been enslaved by the Jews. It really doesn't matter what race you are. You got Farrakhan, there's people in every community that know what's happening.
Right.
And of course you're anti-Semite if you say this stuff, but yeah, I'm happy. You know, I'm late to the game. I only got involved. I found out about the Jew question about 5 years ago. You guys have probably known about it far longer than me, but, I'm frantically trying to make up for lost time and, just doing what I can to spread attention. Cause for me, it's like, you know, as Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. And it's like, if we don't have liberty, and we haven't had liberty since before any of us were born, right. How can we live like this? And then how can we live our lives and know that we're leaving future generations a huge mess? Because this is a huge mess, and it's not going to be mm-hmm. fixed until the Jewish control of money and information is ended, which is a pretty tall order. It's crazy how they just took control of everything without even an army. It's quite incredible.
Right. Yeah. So you had an insurance company, like what, a general type of insurance company?
So in 2005, I was making $11 an hour at Allstate with no benefits. And in about 7 years, worked real hard. And I had a very diverse clientele. It was probably like 80% Asian, Latino, and Black, maybe 20% white. And the clients were wonderful. They all really supported me in everything I was doing. And worked my way up. In 7 years, I was making about $35,000 a month. Had like 4 or 5 employees. It was a great deal, but it was around that time that I started figuring out that something is wrong. And I started speaking out. And as soon as I did that, the company that it was Allstate really did not like what I was doing. And I said, you know what? Allstate's a pretty big company, but you know what? The First Amendment's bigger than you. So, you know, I like what you do for me and all that, but I'm going to keep right on speaking out. Now, my boss had told me probably like 20 years ago, he said, Ryan, if Allstate wants to get rid of you, Allstate will find a way to get rid of you. And that's exactly what happened. They found this little rule that if you don't pass your license to sell stocks and bonds, which has nothing to do with selling insurance, which is what mm-hmm. I did. The boss who sold it to me, he had been in insurance for 38 years, never had to take that test. But they said, oh, Ryan, you didn't pass that test, which I didn't believe in the stock market anyways. I didn't know who controlled it at that time, but I knew that the stock market, something fishy was going on there. So I was really I was disillusioned. I was like, why am I going to sell people stocks and bonds when I don't even believe in it? So I didn't study, didn't pass the test. They said, oh, sorry, you have to sell your agency. And guess what? If you're an Allstate agent now, you don't have to get a 6 and 63 license. So they got rid of me, and then now it's not even a law. Yeah, rule.
Oh, that's incredible. So what do you do for work now?
So I've been a truck driver for the past 4 years, going all over America. Got a great job. It's wonderful. I go down Southern California. And by the way, one of people I come in contact with in Southern California, he's like, you know, I want you to come to my city council meeting where they get 5 minutes to talk too, by the way. I was like, 5 to 10 minutes. That would be amazing. I've never had that. But so, yeah, I you know, I'm very careful about who I tell things to because, you know, people, there's a lot of people that if they're watching that electric Jew on a regular basis, they can respond rather unfavorably to what you say. Yeah. So I'm very, you know, prudent about exactly who I have these discussions with. But because I'm in construction, delivering construction materials, I come in contact with like 90% men, and a lot of the men, they know something's wrong, and they listen. And nothing against women, Diane. I'm sure you know.
No. This is the way it should be. You're reaching out to the strong man in our country. That's a biblical concept of the only way to take over the country is to bind the strong man. So if you invigorate the strong, which is what you're doing.
Yeah, and a lot of women, you and there's a few other women that actually know this, but few women understand that when women take an independent, so like this is, I'm not talking about, it's great when you're combining with Jim and he knows and you guys are a great team. But when a woman takes a solo lead in the home or in politics or, you know, anywhere, it's a problem because you notice back in the Garden of Eden, Satan didn't waste 30 seconds on Adam. He went right after it.
No, Adam was a strong man, but the weakness for the guy is usually the woman.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, same thing. God gave Abraham a promise. He said, you know, Abraham, I'm going to give you a son. Just be patient. And Sarah
and
heard that.
What happened? Yeah. Then
he had him sleep with Hagar. And now we have the problem of Islam we have to deal with.
Well, don't fall into that trap.
Well, Islam, I mean, Judaism is worse than Islam by far, but Islam still got its.
It's a problem.
No, there's no doubt. Yeah. Well, look, I know that, but. Yeah. So the thing with me around here, I don't have any dealings with them even when I was up in Boston.
Yeah.
So, you know, I never really brought them into the equation, but I definitely know it's bad. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. They can be. And the fact that the Jews are bringing them in means that anything the Jews do, it can't be good.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. But they want Muslims coming to Europe and America.
Yeah.
It's good for Europe and America. They want Muslims coming there because it's good for Jews. Dividing their strategy. They want tribalistic, and Islam is one of the most tribalistic, to come in and their leaders and declare holy war against the white man, which is exactly what a lot of non-whites are mistakenly tricked into doing. They don't understand. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of the it's, you know, the vast majority. When you see individuals standing up by themselves, the vast majority of the time, it's going to be a white person. The Black, Latino, and Asian community are overwhelmingly tribalistic. Mm-hmm. They have a hard time having a male figure stand up against the grain and speak his mind. That does not go over well in those three races. That's just a fact. You look across the spectrum, and that's what you see. And the Jews are very good at appointing conservative and liberal Blacks and then telling everyone in the Black community, follow these people. These are your leaders. And
that's right.
So hopefully people get free of a lot of this soon.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't expect it. But the fact that you are pursuing, and it's something that we promote, you're not going to win a grandiose following. But your one-man army of one, you're reaching people. You're talking to individuals. Jesus's success was not in talking to the crowds. And I mentioned this to one of the guys that I wrote to, is that his success and what he strove for, you know, he preached to the multitudes, but these are the same group of people who cried crucify him when he was in Jerusalem. When he was reaching the individuals, the woman at the well, the those that were possessed, those that were crippled. And so he individually, and that's what you're doing. You're reaching individuals. If you can preach to a crowd, that's fine. It will happen sometimes. But the real success will be your individual outreach. And that's what you're doing. You're truck driving. Oh my gosh, you're truck and construction materials to these guys, and they know something's wrong, and you can give them the answer. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's just like the one-on-one conversations. It's not always the easiest to have, and you got to be very careful. Like I almost got into fights. you bring up this subject matter, people emotionally explode, and it's just
they're programmed too. Yep.
It's unfortunate that so many people. I mean, 6 years ago, though, if it was me and I heard this stuff, I would respond like the average person does, where it's, you know, anti-Semitic, racist. You know, I didn't even understand the origin of a lot of these words. It wasn't until I just recently looked it up in the 1828 Webster's Dictionary that I found out racism and anti-Semitism weren't even words in 1828. Our thinking is being shaped by a vocabulary which has been carefully planned to target the white man. Because, of course, racism could only apply to white people. If you're black, Latino, or Jewish, you can't be racist because you don't have power, even though Jews have all the power.
That's right.
But, yeah, it's definitely a learning curve.
Do you have a large family? You don't have to go into detail, but do you have a large family yourself?
No, believe it or not, I'm actually happily single. A lot of the work that I've been able to do, you know, the Apostle Paul, which actually I have his middle name. My middle name is Paul. He said, you know, if you want to marry, that's great. But he says, I would that all men were like me, because if you're single, you actually have more time to serve God and pursue the truth. Just a fact.
That's true.
Had I followed my desires, I would be married with kids today. But I followed my reason. There was a point in my life when I was talking to a young woman for like 7 years, and we were close to, we were writing and came to a decision with my church. And my church was like, if you don't agree with us on this point, we're going to withdraw from you, which they did for 14 years before they ended it. This was my introduction to all this that's going on. I'm used to this stuff. When it happened, I told myself, I was like, you know what? And nothing against women, but I was like, okay, I have a choice between the truth or a woman. Mm-hmm. Truth in God or a woman. Now, Adam responded badly to this. Abraham did. And I'm not a perfect man. But on this, I was like, you know what? If I decide to shut up about the truth that I know right now, no offense to you, Diane, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to start shopping in the dress aisle at the stores.
I totally get it. You know, in some conversations, I feel more butch than the guys I talk to, just so you know. But
yeah, because I was just like, you know what?
The truth thing. Yeah.
I can't sit here and know something is right and just like be quiet to please everybody around me. I mean, I had been feminized enough. When I first looked up the word courage, I was like, wow. I am a coward, and I have been like in an environment that encouraged me to be a coward. How many encounters did I have when it was time to do the right thing? And I was just like, I'm afraid and I'm scared and I'm not going to do it. It happened to me so many times. And I was just like, you know, I'm sick of being a coward. I'm going to have to start choosing. It was so bad in school. They would call on me and I would blush. You can't believe that now, because I'm getting up in these situations and speaking, but I would literally blush every single time. And I was like, you know what? I hate speaking in public. And I was like backtracking. And then I was like, you know what? I'm tired of this. I'm going to keep talking in public until I get this right. I'm going to do it again and again and again and again until I master it. Because I was reading about people who give speeches like Demosthenes and all these speakers like there's a guy, I can't remember his name. He was a famous preacher in early America.
I know who you're talking about. Jim would know too.
Whitfield. All these guys, how they became good speakers, and all of them, it was with a lot of practice. Like I think Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah,
full trained communist, but he spent 15 hours on his speeches. I mean, so you know. If a fraud could do that, I mean, what should the rest of us be doing who actually have the truth? I mean, say failing to prepare is preparing to fail. If you like this preparation, and I started just doing a lot of research and work and I'm not done yet. I mean, there's a lot of things I'm still researching. Like my friend sends me Jim's videos a lot. To be honest, though, I generally try to read, because in about 5 minutes of reading, I could learn about the same as I do from an hour or 2 hour video.
So, I don't mind sending you some things that might help in your search. Jim, we probably should. I don't want Ryan to leave. We should probably do that commercial break.
Well, Don, I can't, because I can't do a share screen.
Okay.
I mean, that's
never
all we
mind. Gonna, all well, we can I'll do is say, verbal.
We're on a Speak Free Radio, folks, and I would show you the books that Money Tree Publishing publishes, but I can't because I don't have two computers to run the system. So that's
and
it.
You might lose your place. We might lose you.
I'm not gonna. It's not. I can't do it. So that's all.
Okay,
I'm
that's
say
the commercial that. Break.
That's the commercial break. So I wanted to. I mean, I got a lot of questions for you, but I wanted to get into the last. I actually saw two videos. Normally, you go to what, Sacramento to do your talks?
Right.
Okay, so I noticed that this one, I think the last two, I don't think you were in Sacramento. You were the one that they carried you out. where was that?
So that was in Vallejo. Now, Sons of God on Gab, he posted that. That actually took place in 2020. That's 2022. So that he just posted that recently, but that did not happen recently. That was like before I went to Sacramento. That was just like preparing for Sacramento, getting carried out. Like,
okay.
But once you get carried out by police, you're really not afraid of anything because you're like, I've seen the worst they could do to me.
At this point, yeah, right.
All right. So when they carried you out of that meeting, did they try to say they're going to arrest you or anything like that?
No, I mean, the newspaper, they threatened a restraining order, and I threatened a First Amendment lawsuit. And so, you know, the lawyers are a bunch of, I wish I could find a decent lawyer who could do his job, because if so, we could hit these cities for millions because they are violating that First Amendment. Like, it's no one's business. And we don't have the lawyers are over here doing, like, you see them on the side of the road, the billboards for auto accidents and all this.
Yep.
But when it comes to a lawyer just to defend your God given right of the First Amendment, these lawyers are running scared. It's pathetic. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yep. Right.
Up and be a man about this stuff. John Adams actually defended the British soldiers before
the war
and was a man about it and got respect for doing that. And today's lawyers, they're too worried about money to actually stand up and do what's right. It's disgusting. Thinking about doing law school myself, because we need decent lawyers. We really do.
Do you know Amaji and Jack Flynn? Have you ever heard of them?
So I have got to. I have like 2 or 3 hours of their videos. I got to sit down and watch all their videos because you sent it to me. I have the link, I got to take
time. Well, they claim that, you know, you could just do this all yourself and just present them with there's a certain way you're going to present it to them. And I mean, I never done it. I don't, you know, but it might help you. I don't know. I mean, they seem to think that it could help them, but and other people.
Eustace Mullins said that representing yourself in law courts was a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. He said, even if it doesn't go anywhere, you waste their time because they have to spend all kinds of money and energy to defend this stuff.
Right.
And publicity. Like when we go to these city council meetings, no matter what happens, you just gave me free publicity. Go ahead and put me on all your televisions. I do it because the average person is eventually going to. That's how I started waking up. I saw David Duke when I was like, I don't know, 22. And I was like, oh, what a racist that guy is. And then I listened to his My Awakening and Jewish Supremacy. And by the way, it's ironic you have me on because my show on Speak Free Radio is supposed to start next Saturday and Sunday.
Oh,
really?
Oh, that's right. I think David said that.
Okay.
Dave Gaheri said
So is it going to be 2 days or 1 day?
2 days for 2 hours each. I think it's like.
That's quite a bit.
Excellent.
Oh no, but that's good. We'll work with you to get your people over to your site, so you know you can have people calling in and stuff, and you know they want to talk to you. So that's great. You know. So what time is it going to be on?
So I think 6 to 8 on Sunday and 7 to 9 on Saturday. It's because David show is like right the 2 hours prior to mine is his show, and then I come on. That's amazing.
Wow. So on Sunday, we're on at 8 Eastern. So
we're on Saturday.
Oh, Saturday. Okay.
So talking about it might overlap, it looks like.
Yeah, that's fine. But you do your Bible study on Sunday. Is that
all right? Yeah, I do Sunday.
Is your Bible study on Speak Free?
Yes. Yes, Diana. And Diana will be on there.
Funny, I attend a church and nobody talks to me because I said that women should not be speaking in church. So, as a result,
that's true. Well, there are certain parameters in regard to that. And if you recall, he was dealing with the Corinthian church. I can only imagine what those women were doing in that church.
Right. The parameters were women can teach under a man's supervision, other women and children. And God knows there's billions of women and children that need to be taught.
Yeah.
And so that was what they could teach, but they were not in the public meeting when the men were present. When Jesus and Paul, they said, okay, you know, I'm done. Can this lady get up and speak? It just never happened.
So
they weren't even dealing with that. We're dealing with a phenomenon that we've never really had to deal with, this whole equality thing, because, you know, men and women, our bodies and our brains are different.
That's we have right.
fears that we're designed for. And the problem, that's part of the reason why I'm still single. I want just simply two simple things. A wife who will obey me, and I'm not a tyrant. 90% of the time, she'd get her way. And then, woman. But there's going to be that 10% when it's very serious stuff that you need. And the other thing is a woman who will have all the children that she can, because I'm the oldest of 18 children. I want a large family. Mm-hmm. That right there eliminates 99% of women. right there.
Well, Diane's had 5 kids.
Yeah.
She knows.
I was talking to one of my kids today, and my third child is having her second, and we had a shower for her today, and we were talking about having kids. I said, I was just trying to keep up. That's all. Just because, you know, had the one and two natural. You know, then the next one would be 2.5 years later, and the next one 2.5 years later, and then I had wild yam in 4 years, and that's supposed to be some sort of natural birth control thing, but I still had number 5 4 years later, and so I was just trying to keep up. That's all there was. But the point is, I know what you're saying in regard to women are not to teach in church. Now, what we do on Sunday night is not church. This is not the official church. This is what we're reading at this point. We were going through when we were going through the Old Testament, Diana would study it a little bit, and I'd study a little bit, but this is more of a survey, running through the Bible survey kind of thing. And so we read about it and we talk about it and try to keep on track. There's always a tendency to want to apply what happened 2,000 years ago with what's going on today. And you need to understand. So there's a certain degree. It's geared toward women. Now, sometimes men will join, but it's not meant to be reached out to men.
Heard of Lori Alexander, Diane?
Lori Alexander?
She's got a site called The Transformed Wife. She's got a Twitter account, but for like 20 years, she tells about how she would not obey her husband, how she just like fought for her way. And then finally she was like, you know what? I'm going to obey my husband. And she was like, wow, I can't believe life turned out this good. Like, her husband was a good. So of course, women are going to have all kinds of objections about he cheated on. Okay. You know, I get it. Your man was a bad man. First of all, you got to take responsibility. You chose him. First of all. And then second of all, you got to understand, there's a lot of men out there who are not bad men at all. And we just simply want, to a man, respect and obedience.
Just a second. Go ahead. Talk to. Go ahead and talk to Jim.
Lori does a great job of dealing with women and kind of like teaching women who, literally schools and media, they don't teach this stuff anywhere. So from time a woman's, if she's a little girl, she's being trained, rebel against your husband. If a man doesn't have money, don't consider him. Go get a job, prioritize school and job over marriage and kids. This is what women are hearing. So this is why our birth rate, our fertility rate has gone from 3.4 in 1958 to 1.9 today, which is the lowest fertility rate in America's history. We've never been as low as this. And 2.1 is replacement, and Islam is having 3.1. Right. It doesn't take scientists to figure out where this is headed.
Yeah, it's bad. You know, I wanted Diane to be here, but she's not here. But, you know, I've been with Diane 8.5 years, and I love being with her. We have fun. I mean, we do more laughing all day, and we get along, and we don't have any issues. I mean, like, because we're on board with this topic. I think that's the most important point. Okay. if you're a guy out there, don't get involved with a woman unless she's involved with the topic that you're involved in. It's going to fail. I'm just telling you, it's not going to work, you know?
Yeah, I'm actually that I did not get involved in a marriage before because the women that I was attracted to were, I mean, what I believe right now, I would have been divorced. I would have been divorced and I would have been child support. Not a doubt about it.
Oh, jeez. So,
it's,
yeah, you don't want that. That's for sure. Child support and you better single than getting involved with that. But we get along really fun because we do everything together about the topic. You know what I mean? That's the thing. That's why we get along. You know, the topic is first. In other words, the subject matter we deal with is more important than even our relationship, and so that's gonna work. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's key. My phone's about to die here, so I'm going out to get my charger.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I'm still listening.
Okay. I wanted to get into, because I saw the other video. I don't know when you did it. I think it was this. I don't know when you did. You could tell me. But it was at another meeting. It wasn't Sacramento. And the guy, he cut you right off. Once you brought up the Jew, he cut you right off. And, you know, how was that for you? That was really maddening watching that one because, you know, when you mentioned Jew, that was it. I mean, it was like case closed, you know? I mean, it's horrible. Very bad. So.
Yeah, it's amazing. Anyone with half the brain could figure out what's going on here because it's like, okay, he criticized Jews and they're shutting him off. The Jews probably control everything. And then, of course, the radio, the newspaper, and the television, they're all saying anti-Semitism happens and blaring this. Well, that tells you who owns the radio, newspaper, and television if you have a brain and you're thinking about this. But, yeah, it's really unfortunate that the one that you saw, are you talking about the one where they carried me out?
No, that was the one you said was in 220 or 220 something or 222. The one that carried you out.
The one that just happened, I was in Sonoma. They were going to declare racism a public health disaster in Sonoma, which is like 80 to 90% white. I showed up. John Lowe showed up. Another gentleman who was a 27-year Marine veteran, Guy Stevenson, showed up. So the three of us were it was good, actually. It's good not being by myself. But, all three of us. John Lowe went first. And the woman was, Hopkins, I think her name is. But she was holding up a sign that she had prepared saying, I dissent. And but as soon as we started talking about the Jews were like, I think I was mentioning Susan Sontag, the white racism is and needs to be eradicated. And as soon as I said that, they wanted to shut it down. I was like, I mean, sounds like you want to eradicate the white race. You don't even want to hear what I have to say.
Right. So. Yeah, that was really bad. I mean, and then, you know, he wouldn't give you the time back to you. They took a minute away from you or something like that. And they wouldn't give you your time back.
Yeah. They took a little 15-minute break to have their temper tantrum. Then they came back in. And I told them, I do not have a body cam, and that's going to be fixed. I will have one. I promise I'm going to have one either at this meeting or the next one because the body cam conversations are even better than this. I actually had a black man with two PhDs and a Latina woman. They came up to me, and they were asking. They were kind of agreeing with what I was saying. They wanted to hear my side. And then the sheriffs, I was explaining to them how, you know, eventually you're going to have to make a decision between upholding the Constitution and doing your job. You signed up and swore an oath to defend the Constitution. So you're going to have to like do that. When they tell you to interrupt me, because they told me, well, you have to leave the podium. Well, I know how it works because the last time I left the podium, they tried to say, well, you're not allowed back in the room. So I said, okay, well, this time I'm not leaving the podium. I'm going to stand right here until they come back. And so I did. And it's the same routine at every city council. They must all get training from the ADL or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt that at all.
They respond the exact same way. And for city council members who don't know each other in cities that are hundreds of miles apart to all respond the same way, something fishy about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They probably have a same manual how to deal with rowdy people. And then they accuse you. What really gets me, they accuse you of trying to disrupt the meeting.
Exactly. They disrupted and accused me of trying to disrupt me. You know, I saw that video of your brother. I think he was talking about illegal immigration.
Yeah.
It is the same tactics there in Massachusetts that they do over here to say, you're off topic, you're disruptive, the same exact stuff.
Yeah.
So,
we've been through this, you know, like, I'm old now, so I don't do all this stuff anymore. I actually moved out of Massachusetts. I mean, now I'm in Texas. All right. Oh. I just said, get me the hell out of Massachusetts. Right now, I don't know if you know this, my brother died. He died a month ago.
I was sorry to hear that. Sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, now I got to sell the house and I got to, you know, it's just a big mess. And, you know, but I was here for a year, you know, before that happened. So, you know, it's crazy. What the hell did you do? But Massachusetts is just completely nuts. I mean, it's just probably like California, but I just had to get out of here. I'm in Texas now. I'm in an area where there's hardly anybody around. There's more animals here, 10 times more animals here than people. There's not no doubt about that. And I like it. It's good. It's relaxing. And I like being around old people. So we're doing fine here. So yeah, but anyway, get back to, now your show, okay? What are you gonna do? How are you gonna approach your show? What's gonna be like the topics that are gonna be talked about?
I value user interaction, both hostile and friendly. Matter of fact, the hostile is even better because the more controversy, the more people want to listen.
Right,
so,
right.
But that and I like your idea. You know, finding books to read because I got like 1,500 books that are on I'm trying to print out because, you know, if the Jews take the internet now down, which is right on the horizon, these books are gone forever. I mean,
yeah.
Gone.
You know, my brother Joe, what happened was because when he died, his daughter, he had probably as many books as you. All right. He had books about everything. And she just ended up getting rid of them. I think giving them to Goodwill or, you know, something like that. And she kept some and some guys took his best books probably. But boy, I wish I knew that because I would have saved the books. I could have shipped them to you and you could have, I mean, he had a lot of books.
I would have bought them.
I wouldn't have sold them to you. I would have gave them to you. I mean, he had thousands of dollars and he had books on everything. I mean, everything, any topic you want to get into, he had a book on it. That's how he was. He Joe was very, very into reading. He's always was reading and reading. And, he's pretty versed on a lot of subjects. Yeah. I wish I knew. I mean, he would, cause she just gave him, I don't know what she did with him. I don't know. I don't think she threw him out. I think she gave him to Goodwill or something like that. But we had more books. If you ever saw the house, every room was just full. It's like a library. It was all bookshelves, you know.
Wow.
Anyway. Okay, so basically, you're going to get into topics that might deal with books maybe you've read and all that.
Definitely. It's because the 1,500 books that I'm talking about deal on the question we're dealing with that you're not finding in the library or on Amazon. So that's why it's so important to get these out because – people in school, your average 90% of America has never heard of this stuff. I mean, 90% of America right now, they don't know who Eustace Mullins is. They don't know that the media is lying about David Duke. They're lying about you. They're lying about me. They don't know this stuff. So until they actually like go in and start reading this, and it's going to be a work getting people off the radio, off the social media, off the television, off the movies. That right there, I mean, you're dealing with a century of indoctrination, and to undo that is not going to be an easy feat. But literally their plan was very smart because instead of bringing an army to conquer America, they just simply took over Americans' minds. Right. And you don't need an army to conquer America. Just take over America's. They've done their job very effectively. But yeah, that and then, having shows on topics of the day, news items that are going on, Russia, China, what to expect from the future. lots of things. I mean, there's so many. I mean, I used to listen as a kid to Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, Mark Levin here recently. Before I found out that these guys are, they're the problem. I didn't know that.
Controlled opposition, basically.
I was like, how do Michael Savage and Mark Levin, how do they get corporations to pay for commercials? Now it all makes sense. It's because they're controlled opposition. Of
course,
they
go. There you go. There you go. Yep.
But yeah, it was so listening to that and, you know, I think, you know, we have decreased a lot because, you know, I was looking at Lincoln and Douglas's debates, and it was like I visited Springfield too. I visited the Lincoln Presidential Library twice, and the Lincoln-Douglas debates would go on for 4 hours straight. There was no commercial. 4 hours straight, and once, and it wasn't like 2 minutes one, 2 minutes. No, it was an hour speaking by one, an hour to respond by the other, an hour response by the other, and an hour. By the other, like that's like we've never had a debate like that in at least my lifetime. There's never been anything like it. Mm-hmm. So the concentration span that we're dealing with now, I mean, I hate to say it, but the average American, we're dealing with the concentration of a flea. It's just like there's no concentration at all. The ability to sit down and think carefully. This is why people are so hung up on, you know, me. You know, I'm kind of like don't really have a lot of hair on the top of my head, and people like focus on that a lot. I always try to tell them, you know what, it matters more what's inside your head than it does what's on top of your head. Control what's inside your head, but you can't control what's on top of your head. So I try to tell people that there are so many people that are so fixated on appearance, on what you sound like, and guess what the television appeals to. Oh, it sounds good. They always look happy. They look handsome. They look beautiful. And that's what gets your average person. It's very shallow, superficial. It's meaningless. And yet we have tens of millions that right now, as we're having this discussion, tens of millions of Americans. I mean, let's face it. We probably would not be on television because, you know, if you're not a 20 to 30 year old woman with a incredible physique, or you're not a man with that looks like Adonis, then
Stanley Tucci, Brian, Stanley Tucci and you have a lot in common, and he's a big draw, just so you know.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm not really. I don't have much hair on my head. I don't care any. I don't care what I look like. It doesn't bother me any. You know.
Well, you know, when you look back, you look at like Julius Caesar when he would go into a tent. He always wore that little olive wreath around his head because he was kind of conscious hair. But his men would sing a song. He said, "Wives, your husbands, you'd better tie down. The bald-headed lecher is coming to town," and because lecher, you don't, man, but and so, but yeah, so he was, you know, there's a if you and there's a lot of others like Socrates, Elijah the prophet. He was and his children like made fun of
him.
If you look back through history, you know, besides, I mean, really, you can't control. You just some things you just can't control, and besides. We have to like shift the attention onto truth because no one has a good pick of Jesus, but we're still talking about him to this day. So it matters more what you do and what you say. I think Ben Franklin said it. He says, if you would not be soon forgotten after you are dead and rotten, then write something worth the reading or do something worth the writing. And that is, it's like do something, write something. That's the purpose of your life if you're a man.
Yeah.
Right.
Information, communication. That's all we have. And that the reason why we know that's important is because that's what the laws are coming against right now. What you do in the councils, what we do on videos, attempting to censor the internet, they cannot handle the plethora of information that's coming out against them.
Now, Ryan, do you have a bit?
Yeah.
Do you have, hold on.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's cutting out a little bit. Do you have a BitChute channel?
Sorry, I think the connection's kind of choppy.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't hear that question.
Yeah. Do you have a BitChute channel? BitChute channel.
You said, do I have a YouTube channel?
No, you BitChute.
I Oh, BitChute. Yeah, I do have BitChute. It's Monte Cristo. I think it's Monte Cristo 1776.
Okay.
Is my BitChute. I do that very sparingly.
Oh, okay. So you don't do a lot with video. Well, you probably don't make a lot of video, right? That's why.
No. I matter of fact, I do that on purpose too, because the fact of the matter is, reading and writing are far more effective at communicating. Because like when you read something, your brain has to work harder reading mm-hmm. than it does when we're listening. Right. The radio is a step up from, it's a step down from reading. Video is at the bottom. I mean, here right. it's kind of effective because we're talking about ideas, yep. but, you're at like your movies with music and all this, it's totally worthless. Your brain is working less watching television movies than it is when we're asleep. So it's like, if you're just a logical person, this is why so many people end up with dementia and Alzheimer's, because their brains are just not working. And it's like, you know, use it or lose it. Ben Franklin said the used key shines bright. So we have to be able to, you know, use our brains, use our bodies, you know, hopefully exercise our bodies and our brains. And that's, you know, and I don't know, like if my body's healthy and I can't think straight, it's time to check out, you know, even if I'm in pain, I'm not taking pot or anything. I think it was Descartes said, I think therefore I am. Yeah. If I can't think straight, it's time to hang it up.
Here's what I noticed though. I noticed that even with video, a lot of people don't have a big attention span.
That's true.
You know, like we do, you know, like when I interview people, I will say, well, we try to keep it under an hour, you know, but I mean, I don't mind watching a video or listening to a video for an hour, but some people, you know, even 5 minutes is too much for them.
Well, it's like, one of the things I'm very grateful to my parents and church for is we had to sit down in church all day on Sunday, 2 hours and that was from the time I was like, 1, 2, 3, we were sitting down and we learned how to sit quietly and listen, even though we didn't know what was going on. So, that just the ability to sit down and sit quiet there. The Greeks have two sayings. I think it was Socrates says, know thyself and the unexamined life is not worth living. And it's so profound because I mean, how many people actually sit down and think about themselves? If we don't know ourselves, chances are we don't know the people going and things going on around us. That's a big problem that I think it was Anais Nin said, we see things as we are, not as they are. So this is why the murderer thinks everybody else is a murderer. The thief thinks everybody else is a thief. This is why the Jews always suspect everybody else because they're guilty of everything. But why the more we purify ourselves, Jesus says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The more we purify ourselves, the more truth we can see, the more the more love we feel for others. Because if you're pure, you begin to look at everybody else's pure, whether they're pure or not. And you know what? People like being given that kind of regard. They love that. And so it's a beautiful thing. Like the better of a person I become, the better and the more I like myself, then I begin to look at other people better, and the more I begin to like them too. It's a two-sided thing, but it all starts with me and God. My relationship with God influences my relationship with every other thing.
Right. Let me ask you this. You said you had 18. There was 18 kids in your family?
And you're the
oldest. So what were the ages?
It's interesting too. I was born in Vallejo, and Vallejo, General Mariano G. Vallejo owned all of Northern California before the 1849 gold rush. He had 12 kids and they were spread over 24 years.
So
it's ironic that the city of Benicia, his wife is named Benicia, and it's right next to Vallejo. So right next, my family had 18 and it was a 24 year difference as well. The oldest to the youngest. I'm 44. My youngest brother is 20. He was born in 2002. I was born in 79. And there was like four miscarriages, including two sets of twins.
My goodness.
So it could easily be more. And my mom had all natural births, all 18. So, yeah, my mom she ran track as a girl. She was one of, I think, 10 or 12 Italian family as well. But, yeah, my mom, and you could just imagine the kind of patient. I can't say enough about her because you could just imagine, well, raising me as a kid took a lot of patience too, but raising 18 of us, I mean, there was no vacations. There was no like mom and dad's night out. It was like nonstop. And it took a lot.
What did your dad do for work?
So he was, he worked in like sign sales. Obviously raising 18 kids in California, you're going to have to be on welfare. Which my parents were, but you know what? None of us are. All of us are like 5 to 10 of us have owned our own businesses already. All of us are gainfully employed. And, but it's just the government. Even my parents, you know, I'm trying to wake them up to the Jew question. My dad's not really.
So that was my next question. Are you how does your family respond to all that? You know,
so a couple of my brothers, they're catching on. My sisters, some of them are kind of catching on. But the thing is, we were raised in Vallejo, and I think like 2 of us are actually married with white children out of 18 children. The other thing is, out of 11 of us boys, only 2 of the boys are married. My brother has 4 kids, and then another brother doesn't have any kids, and then 2 of my other brothers have children.
Do you have more girls? What's the breakup there?
So it was the girls were leading 7-4, and then the boys staged a huge comeback, and the boys 11-7.
I just can't believe somebody having that many kids. I mean, that's because you're a good Catholic family, right? Is that what it is?
Well, we're Catholic. Believe it or not, we actually met in a Church of Christ. Okay. And none of the women in Christ practice birth control. So the beautiful thing is, of all races, a lot of the issues which you see with race, it wasn't in our church, because it didn't matter if you were black, white, Asian, or Latino. If you committed fornication, if you were a homosexual, any of that stuff, you got church punishment. So because it was fair across the board, the went right out the window. You began to understand. So we had families of 16, 15, 12 that were Asian, black, and white. And then you put us all together. And I had great relationships growing up. I mean, there was issues, but it wasn't really about race. It was just people have sins. Everyone has sins. I have sins. Everybody has sins. And, you know, the funny thing is, if everyone's focusing on their own sins, these race issues tend to go away really quickly. Mm-hmm. Because every human, I mean, every white, black, Latino, Asian, there's criminals of all races. Oh, sure, there's disproportionality right now. And that's just simply because the Jews have been playing their tricks among minority races. But once we all focus on our own evil, that's like, I think it was Aristotle said, I count him braver who overcomes his own desires than he who conquers his enemies, because the greatest victory is over self. And for me, it's like, that's why I don't really have any enemies, because no matter what all 8 billion humans on this earth do to me, one of my wrong choices is worse than anything ever done to me, including if they kill me. Because if they kill me, I didn't choose that. They did that. Yeah. That's on them. Yeah. I'm not going to have to answer for that. I have to answer for what I did. There's 3 things I control: my thoughts, words, and actions. That's it. Other than that, like one of my friends, I lived with him. He was in the church. This guy was a genius. He had all kinds of sayings. He's the one that introduced me to the Latin language, which I really want to learn. But there's a saying that was on a time capsule in Wellesley College, and it said, the shadow by my finger cast divides the future from the past. Behind its unreturning line, the vanished hour no longer thine. Before it lies the unknown hour, in shadows and beyond thine power. One hour alone is in thine hands, the now on which the shadow stands. So whenever I get depressed, or I feel discouraged.
Discouraged. Yeah.
I think about that right there, because it's like, you know what? I don't know what the past I can't control. The future I can't control. I just have this hour. That's it. I'll just do the best I can with this hour. And Aristotle said, we're creatures of habit. So you start a new habit. Literally, you one different choice, you form a new habit. You transform your life. So, I really, and Lincoln had a great thing too. He had like this Eastern monarch had his wise men sit down and come up with like the wisest sentence ever said. And they sat down and came to him and he said, no, go do it again. They took weeks and they finally came back to him and they said, and this too shall pass away. And he says, oh, that's wonderful. Because, you know, when you're in your highest moments and your greatest joy, just remember it's not going to last. And when you're in the depths of despair, just remember it's not going to last. And
that sounds like something so I think General Patton had said. What was said, he said, glory is fleeting. And that was a slave had mentioned that to his the Roman conqueror that he recalled. He also, like you, read a great deal and recalled a great deal. And so when
did you see my shirt?
Oh, I can't read the whole thing. Something cento.
It says memento, which is what that was exactly what Patton said. That's the Latin for remember. You must die. That's what they were in their triumphs. They would tell them, remember, you must die. And if you remember that, you know, you're going to die one day. We're all going to go back to the dust. It kind of gives a new perspective. It's funny. I went hiking about 15 miles today at Jack London's house in Sonoma. Beautiful place. Valley of the Moon. Stunning scenery. I love that place. And that guy wrote like 50 books by the time he was 40. I'm slacking. I'm 44. And I haven't written.
Yeah. Wow.
But he wrote like 1500 words every single day. And he has this one quote. He said, basically, you know what? I don't want to like live to extend my life. I want to live like a comet. I'm going to die. And he was right about that. He lived like he was a comet. He got so much done in 40 years. I'm like, 50 books by the time you're 40. Good gracious. That is fun.
Well, and I mean,
and this is not just, he's sitting, and he's traveling. He was going to the, like Samoa, all these islands. Yeah. He was a newspaper reporter, Russo-Japanese War. So, man, it was just incredible. And he grew up an orphan in Oakland. He had a farm. His farm is still state of the art. He just started studying this stuff when he was like 34, and he had like a state of the art farm today. That's still state of the art. Just incredible. I just mind blowing to me that this man was able to accomplish so much at what he was able to do.
It is challenging.
Challenging. How big? Like is this? I don't really know who he is. I've heard of his name. But I don't know, you know, too much about him. But
two of his most famous books,
Call of the Wild.
You call exactly. The Call of the Wild, I think, is one of the best books I have ever read. It's a short book, but it's a beautiful story about a dog that was raised in the California summer and is kidnapped and brought up to Alaska and has to survive the wild and attacks of wolves and all this. It is just a beautiful story of love. And then the guy who gets the most out of him is not the one who is cruel. It's the one who treats him with love. It's a beautiful story. But Jack London, he also wrote Valley of the Moon about how him and his second wife, how they found this place. It's a beautiful story too. And yeah, he wrote a lot of them. He was actually a socialist before, I think, towards the end of his life, he started to come to his senses. And mysteriously, as soon as he started to come to his senses about socialism, his 16,000-foot house that was finished in 1913 mysteriously burned up.
Spontaneous combustion. They said it couldn't happen.
It just burned up. He died 3 years later at the age of 40. But the ruins of that house are still there. And oh my goodness, it was a paradise.
Wow.
But it was there amid the redwoods and streams and farms. A beautiful, beautiful place to relax and write. But yeah, he was really... I guess I do this on social media, 1500 words a day, but he would do it for his writing, and the books that he cranked out were just incredible. I mean, reading his books, I highly recommend it. I read them in school, and it's just about man and nature.
Did they make any movies out of his books?
I'm sure they have, but I had a wonderful teacher in the ninth grade, and he told the class, he said something that stuck with me forever. His name was Richard Wright. And he said that the most unlikely great English teacher you'd ever expect. He showed up and he said he was like a white guy with a ponytail and beer belly and kind of slightly balding, wearing jeans with a jean shirt. And
I sound like a hippie.
With cowboy. Yeah, yeah. I took one look at him.
Classic 60s hippie.
Yeah,
but The guy taught me most about quotes and about books, Call of the Wild. But the thing that he said was, if he reads a good book, he refuses to watch the movie because he wants to create the.
I've heard that before too.
So I never watched The Wizard of Oz. And by the way, The Wizard of Oz has 17 books, which I highly recommend all 17.
Oh, yeah. I've read most of them. Yeah.
I fell in love with the books, the illustrated books by Alfred. Amazing. Which and he was against feminism, even though his mother-in-law was a feminist too. But anyways, sorry, long answer to the question.
No, that's fine. We have John from Wilmington. John, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Did you have any questions for Ryan or anything?
I've got a question for Ryan. Hey, Hoaxbusters, how y'all doing?
Good.
Ryan, are you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Steve Voss?
Steve, is his last name B-O-S-S, like the boss?
V-A-U-S. Steve Voss. He wrote a song called We Must Take America Back. Used to be the opening to John Statmiller's show when he would start his show. I might be wrong about this, but I thought he was once the mayor of Vallejo, California. Oh. probably like in the late 90s.
It could be. I haven't really studied the mayors of Vallejo. I didn't really start studying politics until Obama in 2008. But I know there was a woman mayor. She got like three or four terms. I think Gloria Exline was her name. Osby Davis was the mayor in 2008. And by the way, when people tell you your vote doesn't matter, I mean, it really doesn't matter when you vote for Democrats or Republicans. But at the House of Representatives, Senate, and President, that's all controlled. But Osby Davis, a black man, first black mayor, he is a friend of mine. He won. They had to do a recount. He ran against a homosexual. He won by, in a city of 120,000, one vote. Wow. He won by one
vote. Whoa.
They had to do two recounts because the black population was like, no, you're not going to rob this from us. They kept recounting, and he won by one vote. And an amazing mayor. He actually stood up against pot. I was the only one doing it, and him too. But great man. This is why people who sit there and use the N-word, I'm like, you guys don't know what you're doing. We have very good people in the black, Latino, and Asian community that if we all separate, you're antagonizing people that could be helping us our fight against
Jim them. Maintains that too.
Now I can understand why you don't like HT. I get it now. I understand why you don't like him, because you're right. I mean, if you're using that type of language, it's not going to make these people get on your side, and you want these people on your side. I mean, honestly, I agree. I mean, I think blacks have to unite. I mean, Farrakhan, he's against the Jew. He should be our friend. I mean, we should be, you know, helping him. Well, he's going in his own direction.
He's Muslim.
But still, we could be friendly with him.
That's right. Friend of our friend or enemy of our enemy kind of thing.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Go ahead.
I'll go. I'm
sorry. Go ahead. Just check out that YouTube. Steve Voss. The song is called We Must Take America Back. It's got a real good theme behind it. And I would also like to ask Jim and Diane, especially Diane, with your emails. Have you heard of this gentleman by the name of Sam Melia, who was just locked up? He was arrested in England.
No.
Supposedly he was putting out stickers saying it's okay to be white. He was against immigration. He was saying mass immigration is white genocide. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a little touchy with the black and you know, we need everybody on our side. But at the same time, you talk about it. You know, California used to be 90% white in 1960, and today it's 30% white. So there's, you know, it's a catch 22 there, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Lincoln was very clear after the Civil War. Lincoln was going to send all the slaves back to Africa, which there's a lot of blacks today that thought that would have been a good idea. But unfortunately, you know, he was killed, and then the Jews looking for a victim group and tried to use, they're using the black community today, and 90% of your black community doesn't know they're being used. Mm-hmm. So you know, you, if a black person acts like successful, like they read well, they speak well, they don't get involved in crime, they have a good job, they're told they're acting white and they're stigmatized for this. At the school I went to in Vallejo, blacks, there was no black readers. There's those black Latino readers. Even the Asians that were mostly from the Philippines, they were good scholars and stuff, but the schools hardly give you anything to really digest. But as far as like reading, like the classics and all that, no, that none of them were doing that. I actually dropped out of school. I was just sitting at home reading the classics, basically. And I probably learned more from sitting and reading the classics at home than I would have learned in school. So, yeah, and, really and unfortunate.
The other thing is they don't learn English. I mean, I remember when my youngest daughter graduated from eighth grade and they were up there, you know, giving out their certificates. There was an interpreter, you know, to interpret in Spanish. And I was like, what's going on, man? My God, it's speak English.
Well, and part of that is what I spoke about the two last meetings was the 1965 Hart-Celler Act. That needs to be repealed. And, you know, if you're not from a European country and you're not white, you don't come to America because there's nothing wrong with Africa, Asia for Asians, and Latin America for Latinos. If you're going to come to America or if you're here and you're not white, then you learn the history of America and you start acting like an American, which means you stop acting tribal. You stop agreeing with people who are your skin color and you start standing up for justice of all races. If you're going to stand up for someone unjustly killed by the police who is black, I'd like to see you standing up for someone unjustly killed by the police who is white. Cause we don't see that very often. And you have to stand up for what's right, no matter what the race is. And if you're not going to do that, you don't belong in America. And these ideals are typically white ideals. We see too much tribalism in people who come to America who are not white. That's just, it's a sad reality.
Right. Yeah. Who does your videos, Ryan? You got a team that does your videos where you go to the town halls?
You know, I have a friend, I don't know his name, but he does a fabulous job. It's called Sons of God on Gab. He's the one that really started, on BitChute, and, he has tremendous reach and he started doing this and that's what really, started things taking off.
I've been doing channel.
What's
that? He's got a wonderful BitChute channel. I follow him on BitChute. I don't do that, but do you got any plans of writing a book?
I'm working on one right now.
Really?
And then as soon as I'm done with that, I want to start writing books dealing with the issues we're dealing with right now. Because I kind of feel bad doing all this at city halls and speaking on this. All this like could easily be passed away. But if you write a book, you got something in paper format that long after you die, I mean, 10,000 years from now, that book could still be around. So that's why I kind of want to devote more attention to that. But yeah, thank you for asking. I'm trying to finish it up as fast as I can. I expect within a year I'll have it done.
Right. I didn't hear what the book was about. What was it?
It's
about
a memoir growing up with 18 children, 18 brothers and sisters.
Oh, good. Your story. That's good.
Well, that's going to be an interesting book.
We know 18 people will buy it.
Wow. That's something else.
I just want to get out here real quick. I just want to give a shout out to Uncle Murray. He was on earlier. He has a great BitChute channel. It's called Canst, C-A-N-S-T. Children are not sex slaves. So shout out to Uncle Murray again. And I'm going to get out and let you guys continue your interview with Ryan Masano. Ryan, thank you very much. Appreciate everything you do.
John, no problem. Thank you for calling, John.
You got it. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. John's a good supporter. He's a good supporter of us. He gets us books. He'll say you need a book for Money Tree Publishing, and in fact, all the books here, you know, some of these books he probably paid for them, right, Diane?
Likely.
Yeah. He's a very generous guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he makes sure we all have them. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on the book thing. I think what's happening? Not many people have books, and there's going to be a point in time you're going to wish you did.
Yep.
I mean, that's what I think. I think. You know, I wish I could have. I have no room here. I couldn't take all my brother's books. There's no place to put them. But, it's sad that someone got them, but whatever. I think they'll use them, whoever got the last batch, and hopefully that will be good for them. But it is what it is. I mean, most people don't read today. I have these books and I've been through these books, but, you know, as you get older, it gets tougher to read books. You know what I mean? I'm a visual person, and I used to have blogs. I used to have things like that where I wrote, but what happens is they ban them. Okay, you get kicked out.
So you spent
a year putting up this blog with all this great information. And then the next thing you find out, like WordPress, they took you down. And so I don't do any writing at all. I mean, most of the writing I do and talk about is all in the books. And I just talk about the books, you know, because I'm not going to write about them because they take them down. So I hate wasting time, you know. So Diane's good at writing. She's a writer. Right, nice. Diane?
I've done a number of things in the past. But you're right. As you get older, the want to is there. That's for sure. And one of the things I really encourage kids in doing, particularly if it leads to other things, even though it may be a bit self-involved, is journals. Just keep up to at least doing journals. Write about something. And that's always, I read that long time ago. Write about something. And to kind of keep in practice. And my writing, if I can type it, I'm there. Just saying. Yeah,
Diane loves, she loves to type. She's a typo.
Yeah. I type, therefore I am.
That's what she did for work, you know?
Yeah.
That's why we're good, because she'll type everything for me. I don't have to do it. She does all the typing. So it works out pretty well.
There's a saying, readers are leaders and leaders are readers. And I find that so true, because do you really want to follow somebody who doesn't know more than you? I mean, for me, I'm trying to follow people who have ideals and things that I'm trying to learn from. I don't want to follow someone who's like, you know, why am I following somebody who I'm not trying to be like? I'm trying to follow people who I try to be like God and Christ. That's my ultimate standard. Yeah. But, you know, humans, it's kind of like, that's why I think it's so important to do that on a regular basis. And two, our lives are transformed. I mean, I read War and Peace when I was in submarines on the Navy.
And it was, so you're like Napoleon now, right?
no, I'm not. He invaded Russia and lost. I'm not sure if he was controlled by the Jewish bankers. I don't know if he was and threw them
good
off.
Point. Good point.
I don't know. But the other one was also kind of on Napoleon was Victor Hugo's Les Miserables. Oh, beautiful.
That slayed me. Absolutely slayed me. That was interesting that it was about a third revolution, that if he had not written about it, it would never have been heard about whatsoever. Yeah.
But that was so – that transformed my life, because dramatic. Before then I still am. I mean, I'm judgmental. Don't get me wrong. You see me at those city council meetings. I don't have a problem judging. But what it was, when you read about Javert and Valjean, and then how Valjean was prisoner 24601, 2+4+6+1 is 13. And he was this prisoner, and he totally transformed his life. And this guy Javert is just like, oh, you did a crime, you have to be punished. And he's
totally
like
obsessed. Yep.
Yeah. Totally obsessed. And so these people are just obsessed with like this justice no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it's and this goes to the race thing too. Oh, all black people are bad. All Latino people are no. You have to be able to let every man rise and fall based on his merits. You have to do that.
That's right. That Jim was always maintained. That's why he got in trouble with the Christian identity people, because they don't support that. And he says every person needs to be given a chance to self-identify and to basically perform, like you said, perform or not. And so for me, good riddance. I just assume not have the Christian identity around anyway.
But have you dealt with them, Ryan, Christian identity?
I blocked one guy on.
You have.
They're tough nuts sometimes. They really are. You know,
I believe that Christianity was only for whites. I was like, that is insane. Then he was trying to break out scripture. See,
they have no support.
I was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, you have to read the gospel. Was God does not care what nation you're in. He cares if you obey him. That's what he cares about.
That's right. So, in fact, when you're reading through the Old Testament, right now I'm kind of going through, it's kind of grim, the Second Kings in a listening mode. A number of the countries that are involved in dealing with Israel and Judea, and how God deals with each of these countries and rewards them. And Babylon hasn't come on the scene yet because Assyria hasn't taken over Israel yet. That's the remarkable thing, watching how he deals with Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar. But, and then they had their day too. So, yeah, it's just, and how he glorified his name with each of these countries. And that was always his goal. God so loved the world that, you know, they can't get past that. These people, they can't get past them.
Well, Ryan, listen, I'm gonna let you go. You know why? Because I'm gonna play one of your videos at your council meeting, because it will fill in the couple minutes at the end. So, but anyway, so you are getting on Speak Free Radio next week, you said?
Yes. Plan is to start Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, Saturday and Sunday, what time?
6 to 8 on Sunday and 7 to 9 on Saturday.
Okay, so what you can do, well, if you could send me your links, I'll always get that up there, you know, so people could see it on my BitChute channel.
You can also copy quality. It and put it up on your BitChute channel too.
Well, we want to get people to come to your site and, sure. and interact with you, and I think it's a good idea about the, you know, your book thing. Maybe you should talk about a book or something to get have a book discussion or something. Get people into that mode, because a lot of people aren't into reading. I'm telling you, maybe you can get them into reading and say, here's the book I'm going to discuss, you know, this week or whatever. That's a good thing to do. So you could do that, but. Look, it was great having you on. We'll do it again. I ran this thing tonight, and I'm not usually doing that. We have Diana Plaza does it, and she has two computers, and she can bring video in. I would have brought your video in now, but I can't do it. So I'm gonna do it at the end of this video. I'm gonna put you in the end of it. That will be how we conclude the meeting. So that will be good. So people will see you in action on a Hoax Busters show, and I hope that gets people to see you, and then hopefully they'll gravitate towards your site on Speak Free Radio. So that'll be good. But anyway,
I'm sending you some written material, an entire booklet of the Did 6 Million Really Die, from which Ernst Zundel was prosecuted for. This is the actual book. They no longer have it on IHR.org. I got it off of there. The 9 parts. It used to be a booklet. And it basically gives you thumbnail sketches of every aspect of the Holocaust.
Okay.
Okay, so Ryan,
thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for being here. We had a great time with you. You really made the show go, because it was
going in
a crazy direction because I couldn't get anything to work. So it was good. It was perfect timing for you to come in. And we'll do it again, okay?
Thank you. You all take care. Have a great night.
You too, Ryan.
Yeah, bye now. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Miss Diane.
That sounds good. You're gonna.
Where are we? All right, let me get back up.
You're playing it, or you want me to play it?
No, Diane, I'm gonna add it in the video.
Oh, good. That will work. I know that'll work.
Well, I'm just saying that's what I'll do. I'll put one of the ones he was at the show people what the heck he does.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't get in. I mean, if Diana was here, she could have brought it right in.
Oh, for sure. Throughout the whole thing. It'd be a different type of show, too. This has been good. This, and
I just can't believe 18 kids. Holy mackerel.
You're still stuck on that. Okay.
Well, I mean, that's like incredible.
It is.
I mean, how many people have 18? How can I don't know how anybody can have that many kids. I mean, I thought you were pretty good with 5.
Yeah, you were all sorts of amazed. Well, no need to be amazed.
Okay, so I think that's pretty much it. No one else came in, right, Diane? Nobody else came in tonight.
As far as I know, you're the one that sees it if they come in.
Well, I guess. I thought we.
And you haven't seen it, right?
No, I haven't seen anybody come in. CB sometimes comes in, and I was good that we had Uncle Murray come in.
Absolutely,
and that was good. But anyway, we got to talk about a lot of good topics tonight.
Absolutely.
I hope people appreciate that. And, next week we'll get into, all the other stuff that we should have been doing today. And but that was great. So I appreciate that. Okay, so Diane, anything else you want to say to conclude? Because we only got, you know, like 10 seconds.
Oh no, we're good. I think we're good. Are we good? I think they normally play the Hoaxbuster Ghostbuster theme song at the end of our show too.
Okay, so I don't know.
I know they'll just have to if Dave is in the wings or something, or whoever controls these things, but.